Just because I am who I am, I thought I'd start out today by stirring up a little controversy. What good is family without controversy, right? Yeah. Okay, so there's something that happens at the beginning of November every year. And it divides people into two very specific groups. And see, once you pick which group you're going to be in, then you can't be friends with the other group. You can't. Like, you really can't. And, I mean, my Facebook feed, like, goodness, November 1st. Like, it was crazy. Everything I saw was about this. And so I'm going to put you guys on the spot today. I want to know which side you're on, which group you fall into. All right, so I think I have a graphic here. We're going to find out who our friends are and who our enemies are. Are you OCD? Like, not obsessive compulsive, but obsessive Christmas disorder. It is a real disease. November 1st, where people believe that on November 1st, the day after Halloween, it is acceptable to put up a Christmas tree and to deck the halls. Rylan Luke, I'm raising you better than that. Oh, we have obsessive compulsive. But see, that's not right. It's not right. Like, I love Christmas, and Christmas is a full season, and, like, I get it. Like, I love Christmas. I've already done some, like, Christmas shopping. I've already bought a few little things here and there, but you don't see them in my house yet because there's this wonderful thing called Thanksgiving. And thank you, guys. Thank you, guys. So, this amazing thing called Thanksgiving, and it is like one of my favorite days of the year, and I love it. Like, it's got some of my favorite things in it. Like, it's this perfect blend of food and family and friends and football, and it's just a good day. Like, I love hosting Thanksgiving at my house. I love doing crafts and playing games and just having fun. When my home is full, and my belly is full, my heart is full. And I hate skipping over Thanksgiving. Plus, when I was a kid, it was the day after Thanksgiving that Christmas season started. We put up the tree. We had this Kenny Rogers Christmas special on VHS that we recorded years before. And we would listen to it. And then the snow would start falling on the screen. And, like, it just gave me all the feels and stuff. That's when Christmas starts for me. Now, I'm not going to say that you're my enemy if you raised your hand except for Jared, but it's just a matter of opinion, I suppose. If it makes you happy to put your tree up, then you can put it up in June. I don't care. My godmother has Christmas trees up in her house year-round, so, but she's crazy. Every holiday. Yeah, exactly. Different tree for every holiday. But see, I can see how Thanksgiving could be stressful if your family doesn't get along well. See, I've been very blessed, and I recognize I've been very blessed to have a very close family. And so it's fun for me to spend time with my family most of the time. Then brother-in-laws show up, and this is all about you today, Jared. But family time can be hard because family can be hard. There is no such thing as a perfect family. Not even the one that God specifically chose and created to be the one for Jesus to be born into. But see, before we get to Jesus, before we get to Christmas season, before we put up a tree, we're going to talk about the crazy family first. So in this series, over the next few weeks, we're going to be learning about how the family of Israel came to be by looking at the first four fathers that are represented in the book of Genesis. So this series is about the family. It's about how the family was formed. It's about why the family was formed. So we're going to get started. So that brings us to the story of Abram. Sorry, that was hot. So if you're flipping to chapter 12 of Genesis, that's where we're going to get started. And we will, like I said, we'll be in Genesis most of this, the next few weeks as we kind of trace this family line. So we don't have a whole lot of information about Abram. We know that he's a guy that's married to a woman named Sarai. And they don't have children. So chapter 12, verse 1. The Lord had said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on the earth will be blessed through you." It's a pretty big promise, isn't it? See, God is telling Abram that if he will leave the security of his country, his people, and his father's house, that he will not just be a father to a child, but to an entire nation of people. So let's put this into some cultural context. You guys know I like cultural context. So the modern interpretation of this kind of misses a lot. When we read it with our Western mindset, of our individualistic mindset, we miss a lot. So first of all, Abram is part of what is called a patriarchal collective society. So that means that family is kind of central. Like, it's, you think in terms of family, you think in terms of community, not of self. And the family units are organized by the father. So that's what I mean by patriarchal. It's the father is the leader of the family. See, when daughters get married, they leave that family unit and they become part of their husband's family unit. It traces through the husbands, through the men, through the fathers. Sons remain in their father's households with their wife. So when a son gets married, their wife leaves their family and comes and is a part of the husband's family now. So for a son to leave the father's household would bring shame on their entire family. See, families were bound together by honor, and they needed each other to survive. It doesn't mean so much that they lived in the same house, like the traditional kind of house that we think of now that we live in, like a one single family unit in a home. No, they had more like communes, like big communities of, you know, at certain times it was intense, and depending on which time it is and stuff, there's still societies that live like this, but they lived near each other. They coexisted as a unit. And it's just the way the system was set up. So for Abram to leave his father's house was a really big deal. Now, second, it's a really big deal for a family or for a married couple to be childless. See, not having kids is another thing that would bring shame on a family. See, children secured the future. It wasn't just about wanting to have kids. They needed to have kids for the family line to survive. So Abram at this time was about 75 years old. That means that Sarah was about 65 years old. They kind of lost hope. Like, it doesn't seem like as big of a deal to us because, you know, in the society that we live in, we kind of think about, like, we're encouraged to become our own man, well, or woman. We're encouraged to be yourself, to speak your truth, to think of self first. It's rare for people nowadays to choose to live somewhere because they're close to their family. People chase careers more than family. Having children is considered to be more of a choice than a cultural expectation now. It doesn't mean that it's any less devastating to not be able to have kids. But it's not the same kind of source of ridicule and shame that it was then. Now, I'm not saying that one system is better than the other, but we need to understand that they're different. Different times, different cultures. So this story reads a little bit different with that context. But Abram was willing to leave the security of his father's household because God had promised to make him a father. They were trusting that God would fulfill his promise. Now, if you flip ahead to chapter 15 in Genesis, we can, as you start reading it, and I would encourage you guys to, as we're going through this series, kind of read along in Genesis as we're going each week, because there's so much more information than we can get into in a few minutes on a Sunday morning. But in chapter 15, Abram is getting discouraged. Now, and God speaks to him and he says, "Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward." And Abram responds. He says, "Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus." And Abram said, "You will have given me no children, so a servant in my household will become my heir." You gotta feel a little bit bad for him at this point, right? See, I'm not a patient person. I have this, like, if I'm not early, I'm late kind of mentality. And I know that makes me really hard to live with. Like, my poor kids. Like, I have to get there. But I married someone who has never been in a hurry in their life. True story. See, he takes his time, and he doesn't really worry about it. Like, "Well, we'll get there when we get there." Like, it's okay. It's fine. Everything's fine. And it took me over 10 years to realize that his lack of speed does not mean that he doesn't care. See, we just operate in two different time frames. So picture Abram. He's running home, and he tells Sarai about God's promise. So he, like, runs home, and he's like, "Hey, honey, I heard a voice from this guy that was telling me to just, like, pack up everything because we're having a baby." She must have thought he was crazy. Like, she's beyond, like, childbearing years. Like, he's crazy, right? But see, that was their only hope. And because that was their only hope, they went. They probably expected, you know, God's going to make a way for us to have a baby within the next year or so. Like, that's how it has to work. Like, we're getting older, so if he's going to give us a baby, it's going to happen like that. It's going to happen fast. But see, just like me and Matt, God and Abram were working on different time frames. Genesis 15, verse 4 says, "Then the word of the Lord came to him, 'This man will not be your heir.'" So this Eliezer, the servant guy, "he will not be your heir, but a son who is your own flesh and blood will be your heir. And he took him outside and he said, 'Look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them all.' Then he said to him, 'So shall your offspring be.' Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness." See, Abram's trust was renewed. Time had still passed. There was still no child. But because God had renewed that promise to him, his faith was renewed. See, it's tempting sometimes, though, to think that God needs our help. You guys ever try to help out God? Yeah, no say. But see, when God's timeline matches ours, it's easy to trust him. But when you have to wait, we don't like to wait. See, Abram was 85 when he got the promise. And then another 10 years had passed since God had promised Abram that he was going to have a son. 10 years. Have you guys ever waited 10 years for a promise? But we can skip ahead. In chapter 16, we see how Sarah tried to help God out. And the result of her impatience was Abraham's first son being born, but it was by his servant Hagar. It didn't end well, did it? You guys know the story of Hagar and Ishmael? Didn't end well. Read it for yourself. It's pretty interesting stuff. But there's one important thing that I want to bring out in this, is what God told Hagar. So Hagar is a servant who now has a child, who now is getting ridiculed by the wife of the man who is the father of her child because she has a child when she was the one that told her to do it. You see how this is like a Jerry Springer thing? So what God told Hagar. He said, you are now pregnant and you will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael, which means God hears. For the Lord has heard your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him. And he will live in hostility toward all his brothers. Side note, hostility here in this cultural context does not mean in like anger and like violence against. It means away from, set apart from. He's going to be set apart from his brothers that he doesn't have yet. See, this is not a curse. God is not giving Hagar a curse. He's not cursing this son. He's not cursing this birth or this life. He's just saying what's going to come of this boy that is born into this situation. See, God does not curse the results of our mistakes. Ishmael was not part of God's plan, but God still heard the cries of Hagar. And it says, God was with the boy as he grew up. Hagar and Ishmael were not abandoned. The mistake was not swept under the rug. Not by God. And in this, we see that God is still honoring his promise to Abraham. Abraham was 86 years old when Ishmael was born. He had a son now, so everything's all right, right? Like, I mean, God needed a little bit of help to make it happen, but now he has a son, so now he can be the father of a great nation. If we skip ahead to chapter 17. Gosh, I wish I could read the whole chapter, but I'm going to sum up a few main points. See, we're going to skip ahead just a little bit to where Abram is now 99 years old. And the Lord appears to him to renew their covenant. What's a covenant? A promise. So he shows up to renew this promise. Ishmael was now 13 years old. Abram had probably been believing over the past 13 years that God was going to use Ishmael to fulfill this promise. See, in this culture, a boy was considered to become a man at the age of 13. You know any 13-year-old boys? It's hard to believe. So I don't believe that it's a coincidence that God appeared to Abram when his son was turning 13 years old. See, I'm guessing, and I don't know, this is like not in the subtext or anything, this is just Carrie guessing. I bet that Abram thought that God was going to come down and say, your son Ishmael is now going to receive my blessing. Because another cultural thing for this time was when a man or when a boy turned 13 and became a man, that was when they received their father's blessing. That was when they received the blessing of their inheritance. They may not have received the actual physical inheritance, but they received the blessing. So this is probably what Abram's thinking, that God's going to give Ishmael his blessing. But see, God had other plans. God renews his promise to Abram, but he also takes it a step further. He changes Abram's name to Abraham. Abram means father is exalted, which, I mean, I bet he has gotten all kinds of jokes made about him because his name is father is exalted and he's childless. But Abraham means father of a multitude. He's no longer exalted as an individual, but he is a starting point of a nation. You see, this came with a new stipulation. See, Abram and his descendants will be blessed as long as they are faithful to keep God's covenant. So, a covenant, yes, is a promise, but it's an agreement. It comes with conditions. God is saying, I will bless you if you are faithful to me. If you are not faithful to me, then blessings will not follow. See, Abraham's new nation was to be set apart. They were set apart from the other nations around them. They needed to be seen as different. And later on, you read about all of the laws and everything that came apart with Moses, and that's further on. We'll maybe get there some other time. But these laws were not God just being like really anal about things. He was shaping this nation and preparing them to be who they needed to be, to look more like him, so when it was time for the Savior, the tree would be ready for that fruit. And he also changes Sarai's name to Sarah, which means princess. Isn't that pretty? Because she's not going to just be a mother of nations. That nation is going to include kings. So now Abraham is 99 years old. Sarah is 89 years old. They are well past the point of being able to have children. So how do you think that Abraham responded to God being like, yeah, I'm going to bless Ishmael. He's going to have a good life. But I'm not establishing my promise with him. I'm not establishing my covenant with the result of you trying to rush me. There's something else coming. So how did Abraham respond to this? He laughed. Can you imagine laughing at God? Have you ever laughed at God? A little bit. But it seems impossible, too impossible to take seriously. But see, it's the impossible where God works the best. If it was easily possible, then would it be a miracle? So Abraham didn't learn his lesson the first time, 13 years earlier. So he tries to help God out again. He's like, hey, but God, I have a son. He's 13 now. Will you consider him? Can you just establish your covenant promise with him? And see, God agrees to bless Ishmael, but he says, no, there will be another son. Isaac will be his name. And my covenant will be established with him. Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born. The only explanation for his birth is divine intervention. So what's the point of all this? Why am I telling you this? What role does Abraham play in the overall story of God's plan for universal redemption? See, Abraham was chosen to be the father of an entire nation of people that were set apart as an example of how to live as the image of God. And this chosen group of people would be a blessing to all nations. That was the promise that was given back in chapter 12. See, when we hear this story, we can see that God was faithful to keep his promise and to give Abraham a son. He was faithful. Isaac was born. But what about that other part? That part about them being a blessing to all the other nations? You know, if you've spent much time in the Old Testament and you know anything about the nation of Israel, it's kind of hard to picture them being a blessing to anyone. They were a little messed up. Pretty sure they're where Jerry Springer came from. But see, it wasn't about Abraham personally being a blessing to other nations. And it wasn't even about the nation of Israel itself being a blessing to other nations. See, they were included in being a part of the blessing that Jesus would bring because he would come from their family. They're a blessing by association. Do you guys realize that every single story and verse of the New Testament and the Old Testament points toward Jesus? Start reading the Bible with that in mind. When you read something, think, how does this point to Jesus? See, from Abraham in the book of Genesis to the birth in Bethlehem, every single bit of that story is God preparing the way for Jesus to come into the world. See, God chose Abraham to be the founding father of a nation that he would plant his son into. Not because he was perfect. Abraham wasn't perfect. And over the next few weeks, we're going to hear about some other imperfect people. You see, he was chosen because he believed that God would be faithful to his promise. Sometimes my mind wanders a little bit, and I'm like, well, what if? I wonder if. See, we read about Abraham because he was who God chose. But I can't help but wonder, did God try this with someone else too? Was there someone else that God tried to establish a promise with, and it didn't take? See, there's over 20 years between God coming to Abraham and saying, trust me, and I'll make you a father of a nation. And the time when he was actually given the son. It was almost like that 20 years was like a testing period of seeing if Abraham would be faithful to God before he was entrusted with the fruit of the promise. Just got to kind of wonder sometimes. That's all I got to say about that. Like, maybe there was someone else. Maybe there was hundreds of years of God talking to people and encouraging people. And maybe he's just the first one that passed the test. See, Abraham was not special. He was a man. But he was faithful to God through that time. He wasn't perfect. He made mistakes. But he was faithful. And because of that, he became the father of a nation. So I've got a family tree here. And we're going to kind of build on to this over the next few weeks. So as we kind of build this, we're going to be talking about the family of Abraham, the sons that came from him, and we're going to kind of learn about their journey and their history a little bit. And you can see here that Abraham, he was married to Sarah. They had the son Isaac. We have Hagar over here and Ishmael because we can't forget about the mistakes. We can't forget about what happened here too and how God used that too. And see, this whole message has probably felt a little bit more like a history lesson than like a normal kind of sermon, right? I mean, I do love history. But I think it's important for us to go back and talk about these things and learn not just the stories of the people, but why they're important, why they were selected to be written about that we still read about thousands and thousands of years later. See, I believe that if we can see the structure of the Old Testament like a family tree rather than a random collection of confusing stories of messed up people that we try to pull moral lessons from, then we will be able to see God's plan, his mission of reconciliation come to life and start to understand where we fit into this story. Where do we fit into this family? I also want to point out that people can be used by God even when they're not perfect. If God can use the messed up people that we're going to be talking about for the next couple weeks, despite their mistakes, If he can use them, he can use us. See, no one can stop God's faithfulness. So whenever I was trying to think of what we needed to talk about in November, I don't like cliches. I don't like to fit into molds. I like to try to think outside the box. And every single church in the world right now is talking about being thankful, right? And I was like, no, we're going to talk about anything except for being thankful or grateful or anything like that. But then Matt was like, hey, I have an idea for a series. Let's call it Full. And I was like, I hate it. Because it's just so like gimmicky. And it's corny. And he's like, no, we can talk about full, and we can talk about like words that end with full. Like thankful and grateful and faithful. And I was like, I hate it. But then I realized this was exactly what we needed to talk about. Because see, in December, we're going to be talking about Jesus. Yeah, how about that? It's also a little gimmicky, huh? But we're going to be talking about Jesus, and we're not going to just be talking about the birth of Jesus. We're going to be talking about who he was, who he is. But it's so important to understand somebody, to understand where they come from. So over the next few weeks, we're going to be talking about where Jesus came from. And we're going to be looking at the intentional ways that God used these people to shape a family that his son could come out of. And when I started working on this message, so I thought about the four patriarchal fathers, and I was like, yeah, we'll do faithful, grateful, hopeful, and thankful. Those are our full words. And I was like, you know, I think it's in Hebrews, there's scriptures referring back to Abraham, talking about the faithfulness of Abraham. And the word faithful, it surrounds Abraham. And so in my mind, that's what I'm like. I'm like, we're going to talk about how faithful Abraham was. And then as I started working on this, I was like, no, this story is not about Abraham's faithfulness. This story is about God's faithfulness and how he's faithful despite our mistakes. He's faithful despite our shortcomings, our imperfections. So I don't have a super like spiritual ending or anything for today's message, because it is kind of we're laying the foundation. We're getting the family tree started. But I want to challenge you guys this week. Dig into Genesis. I know it's not always a fun book to read. A lot of people say if you start reading in Genesis, you'll never read the Bible. But there's so much rich history and depth. Read it like a family journal. And as you read it, I want you to think about the characteristics of God that are represented in the stories. Because it's easy for us with our human eyes to read the story of Abraham and think about Abraham's faithfulness of leaving his father's house, of trusting in God's promise. Later on, he was so faithful to believe in God that he was willing to sacrifice his promise back to God. But really, this story and every other story in the Bible is about God. It's showing the characteristics of his faithfulness. So get into your Bibles a little bit this week. I know you guys don't have anything else to do. But I can pretty much guarantee there's not anything you can do that's a little bit more enriching than getting in. Huh? Audio Bible. I can't do that. I fall asleep. But there are so many resources of ways that show and talk about and explain the genealogy here, that talk about the family of Israel, that talk about these patriarchs. If this is something that interests you, I'll be posting some resources on our Facebook page this week to kind of help you guys out with that. So, and the Read Scripture app is awesome. It does help, and it's free. So I would challenge you, get in. Think about God's faithfulness this week. Look at your own life. Look at the pattern of his faithfulness in your own life. All right, I'm going to say a little prayer, and then we're going to get out and enjoy this beautiful fall day. Father, thank you so much for your faithfulness. Thank you for your goodness. Thank you for your grace. God, we can stand on the foundation of your promise. We don't have to hesitate to move when you tell us to move because we can believe that you've already provided a way. God, sometimes it's so hard for us to take steps because we can't see where we're going. We want a detailed map explaining what it's going to look like, where we're going to end up, all of the stops along the way. But God, when you hand us a blank piece of paper and a compass and tell us which direction to move, we can trust you just as much as if we know the end of the story. God, I just pray that you would put a hunger in our hearts that can only be met with filling our lives with your word. God, that we have this hunger and this desire to know you and to understand you and your purpose and your plan. That God, we surrender our time to you. We surrender our days to you. We surrender our distractions to you. God, I just pray that as we go about our lives, that we would stand on the promises presented to us in your word. That we would recognize that this is not just an ancient text, God, but that this is a living document of your story, your universal, timeless story that we are still in. God, you are still writing the story. You've invited us to participate and asked us to trust you. And God, we can, because great is your faithfulness. God, and we can stand on that promise no matter what. Amen. All right.